This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Justin Gaethje silences James Vick. Tyron Woodley says he will fight Darren Till at UFC 228, whether he makes weight or not. Daniel Cormier still planning to defend his light heavyweight title before he faces Brock Lesnar. Antonio Carlos Jr. withdraws from UFC Sao Paulo. We will chat with his now former opponent, Elias Theodoro, and find out what's on the horizon for him. Brandon Davis steps in on short notice to fight Zabit Magomed Sharipov on under 2 weeks' notice at UFC 228. Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa or to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. Joe, you missed our one-year anniversary last week.
I know, was it?
Yeah, it was episode 52.
All right.
And it was the exact one-year anniversary of the show.
All right, congratulations.
Well, congratulations to you.
Yeah, I know. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah.
It went by quickly.
It did. I mean, I don't even know where I am anymore.
you just got back from China.
So ni hao, everybody.
Yeah.
Shishé, that's all I learned.
What time
it's
is
so
it?
Sad that I go to all these countries and I don't learn any of the language. I just have to learn hello, goodbye, and thank you.
Oh, you know, Google has that headset now where it translates in real time.
And you're telling me now I need to get in that.
Yeah. It's like $200. You put in your ear, and if somebody starts speaking to you in Cantonese or Mandarin or whatever, it will translate it in real time. And then it will also, when you talk, it'll translate what you're saying into Cantonese, and you can try relaying that.
Try it. Okay, I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
Done.
I think you might need an Android phone, though.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right, I'm going to figure it out because that's useful, like trying to get around China, asking for food and taxis, and taxi drivers didn't even know how to get me to the hotel. I couldn't give them instructions. I tried showing them on my phone. Yeah, it's tough in China.
I got an amazing app today that transcribes audio. You just put in, you like import your file, and when I'm writing articles,
it automatically translates.
It transcribes them, and then you can export a text file and email it yourself. And I did. I interviewed Darren Till. And it's transcribing him, but his accent is extremely difficult to understand, you know, if you're like a translator, because he speaks in a lot of slang and stuff like that. So it's not 100% correct, but I can go back and listen and correct it on the fly.
Yeah,
and it's great. I'm so happy I found this thing.
How's his swearing come? Is it getting better?
No, not really.
No?
He's still swearing a lot.
Yeah?
No C word.
Some F-O-O-Ks?
Yeah.
F-O-O-Ks?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But that's funny.
No, but that's more a McGregor thing. His is like, well, we'll talk about it another time.
Yeah.
It's a different type of dialect.
Different, yeah.
Yeah, it's like F-U-C-H, but it's like the C-H is like the Hebrew C-H, the
Huh.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. So he's interesting to speak to. He'll be on next week's show.
Yeah, he's such a character, man. I can't believe the magnitude he's created in the UFC already. It's insane.
Well, I have a feature coming out on SportsCenter next week that talks about how quick his ascension was. Like, he went from, like, a year ago today, he had just beaten Jessen Ayari. Like,
yeah, who?
Who? And
yeah.
He still hasn't fought in North America. He still never fought on pay-per-view. And now he's headlining a North American card on pay-per-view for the title.
Yeah.
Like, a year later.
And everyone's saying, there's a lot of talk saying, like, the UFC wants Woodley to lose. So this way they can kind of go to England and they can sell out the O2 arena. And
yeah.
It's going to be nuts.
I don't think that the UFC ever wants anybody to win or lose. I think they have contingency plans. And the thing about Tyron is, Tyron, I think, is the most disrespected fighter on social media that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching Ariel's show on Monday and tweeting out some newsworthy things from that show. And when it came to Tyron saying he's not going to fight Kamaru Usman, people are like, oh, this guy's not active. He's a bum. And I'm thinking, he was the most active champion in the UFC last year.
Absolutely.
But he just got injured.
What, he had three defenses?
Yeah, three defenses in like a calendar year.
In the calendar year, yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And then the perception around him now is that he's like, he's not willing to fight. It's like, the guy suffered a shoulder injury, was it a shoulder separation or something? I forget what it was. Torn labrum, I think it was, something
like
that.
Yeah. But what drives me nuts is the casual fans saying, oh, you know, you should fight anyone, you're a fighter. It's not fighters anymore. We're not fighters, we're athletes. And Tyron Woodley is a great example, like George St. Pierre, of being the athlete in the game. And that's what we all need to be, is these athletes. Yes, you got to have that fighter instinct, but Woodley is right. I mean, why, as a champion, do you have to fight someone on short notice? You are the champ. You earned the spot of being a world champion. You deserve a full camp. You deserve, you know, how you want to prepare for your camp. You know, if for him to fight Usman's totally different fight. Why would he want to take that? So that's a smart move from Woodley. He's protecting his career. And in my eyes, I mean, he could easily be the greatest of all time if he really put some good strings of wins together.
Well, it's weird. The good thing about being champ is that you can't really make a bad business decision. If you decide to take the fight with Usman, it's a good business decision because you get more favor from the promotion because they're like, this guy's willing to step in and blah, blah, blah. And it builds you promotionally from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to anymore.
Yeah, but on the flip side of that, if he turns it down and says, I'm only fighting Darren Till, I'm not fighting on 24-hour notice against a completely different fighter, it still protects him as being the champion. Like, he's not risking the chance of losing the belt and losing everything because your marketing currency goes down the tubes if you lose to Usman, right?
Wasn't there a case with John Jones in that?
John Jones was scheduled to fight, I think it was Dan Henderson. It was UFC 151.
Yeah.
And the fight got canceled. I think it was like a week and a half out or a week out. And I still remember this because I was at the museum in New York. I forget which one it was, like with all the dinosaurs. Museum of Modern Art? No, I don't remember. But I was there with my family, and this news was breaking as I was there, and I was like, "Oh God, I like need to stay focused on my family." But I was interested. All this stuff was happening, and Chael Sonnen offered to step in, and then like the event was like on the brink of getting canceled, and all this stuff, and I was trying to multitask, and it wasn't going well. But Chael offered to step in and take the fight on short notice. The UFC wanted to make the fight, and John Jones was like, "No, I'm not doing it."
Yeah.
And then the whole card got canceled, and Dana White famously called Greg Jackson a sport killer because Greg Jackson advised Jones not to take a short notice fight against a different opponent.
Yeah, I totally agree with it. I wouldn't want it. I want a full camp. No, I don't think a champion should be forced to do that. If you're a contender, absolutely. For Kamaru Usman, for sure, it's the greatest opportunity of his life. But as a champion, it's not fair to do that.
But were you old? Like, how old were you when you you beat DeBont and became the champion?
I think 29, 30.
Okay, so you were old enough to know that it wouldn't be like, because I know that young Joe was take a fight in a week.
Yeah, but like that's young contender Joe, know? But champion Joe wouldn't do it. My team would advise me against it. Yeah. I mean, I worked so hard. I worked my whole life to get there, and then all of a sudden, I'm just going to, you know, different strategy, different preparation, and, like, even what Woodley was saying, he prepares down to the molecule, he was saying. He said, you know, everything, the tendencies, the way he moves, the defense he's planned, the different strategies, the attacks are going to work. A good fighter prepares for all of these things, so don't ask. It totally changes now.
I like that Darren Till gives fighters kind of a false sense of security. Like, when he was talking about Woodley, he's like, Woodley's one of the smartest fighters, and he's going to have game plan for me to a T. Like, he's going to know.
For sure.
And he's going to, like, that's how he's going to try to beat me, and, you know, I'm going to try to beat him in the fight the same way. But, you know, there are a lot of fighters that say, oh, I'm going to destroy this guy. And Till kind of says both. He says, like, I'm going to be the next champion. I'm going to beat this guy. I can't wait to do it. But, like, he also gives a lot of credit to his opponent, which I think is interesting.
Well, for sure. And, like, I mean, I think every opponent you fight at the highest level is going to be good. There's no hiding it. I mean, that's what a lot of people were calling Gaethje B-level fighter. Man, the guy's in the UFC. He's fighting the top guys. He's an A-level fighter. And, I mean, at that level, you're fighting everyone at a top level. So, I mean, there is no – I like that he has the respect, but he's so confident that he's better. It's fine. Like, I mean, he's so confident, like, even before he came, that he's going to win this fight. So, for him, it's like, yeah, he's good, but the whole Mike Tyson quote of everyone has a plan until they get hit. Yeah. That's the way he probably looks at it. Yeah, you're going to be good. You're great. You're a champion, but I'm better. I mean, that's the confidence you need to be a world champion. And I know we talked about this before the show, and I'll bring it up now, but Woodley had me hyped up on the Helwani show. Like, I sent it to my fighters, and I said, listen to this. I'm like, this is the passion you need. This is the type of hype. He was making it personal. He got in it. He wanted it. That makes you hungry, makes you want it. A lot of times, if you've been in the sport too long, you forget about the why. And I think that's the most important. Why are you doing this? Why do you want to do it? I mean, when you sit there and you have a good life and you're making money and you're the champion and you're popular, there's that hunger. What's that hunger going to do for you? But he sounded hungry, talking about how it's personal. And I mean,
How he's making every fight personal.
He was hyped up. He was amped up. He's talking about the finish. And it was so how he's going to knock him down, equilibrium. Like, he's just had such a vivid visualization of the win. Man, that's what makes a true champion. And I went from, I don't know, I think Till had a chance. But hearing Woodley, man, now I'm leaning towards Woodley to win this fight. Just hearing him, that confidence and that self-belief in himself, I'm all Woodley now.
Well, it seems like Till has convinced everybody that he's going to win this fight. Like, if you look at a lot of the people that pick fights, I think a lot of people are forgetting how good Tyron Woodley is.
Absolutely. We forget. I mean, what Darren Till has is that southpaw, awkward style. He can catch you, good counter fighting. He's going to bait you into things. But Woodley's wrestling, I don't know. It's unstoppable. And Woodley said something in that interview which really stuck to me because I did the exact same thing in my fights. He said, you know, Darren Till might be bigger, but he's upper body bigger. He's like, what's power? Where does the power come from? Where does the strength come from? From your legs, from your glutes, from your quads. Woodley's basically shaped like a running back.
Yeah.
So that power that he has in his legs and the power that he can generate is going to be a lot more than Till can. So that's where his confidence comes into that. He knows that once he has that opportunity to shoot or he has that opportunity to capitalize on something, Woodley's so explosive that he could exploit that very easily.
And his size kind of like a smokescreen in combat sports, that size matters. A lot of people will always look at the bigger fighter and say, oh, this guy's so much bigger than this guy.
I think it's the quality of the muscle. You know, you can have a big guy like you. Sometimes you see like those Hector Lombards that are really big. That's more like dense,
well, he's built
heavy,
big. He's not very
built
tall.
Muscular. Yeah. But Tyron Woodley's muscle is, you know, fast twitch fibers. That's explosive. That's type one. Boom, you're going to switch and go. His issue is that he needs to kind of control that explosiveness because he needs to be able to explode, relax a little bit, explode. So if I'm fighting Woodley, I would try to keep that pressure on him as much as I can. You don't want to give him space to close that distance. So I can see, you know, Till really trying to keep the distance like close to him, make him bite and then counter off of that. But you got to shut that explosiveness down.
There's kind of always this myth around Tyron Woodley that his muscles are going to take up all of his energy and he's going to gas out. It's just never shown to be the case.
He's
an elite athlete.
That's it. Absolutely. And I mean, his fiber type, and it's a lot of it's genetic, but I mean, that guy's explosive. Definitely the most explosive in the welterweight division.
I want to be built like him when I'm 36. Yeah. So I've got maybe, 100 days left to
He's 36,
eh? Yeah, I think so. I think he's 36. I think he's my age.
A couple more days, we'll get you on that,
exactly.
That sauce.
Get me on the Tyron Woodley diet, whatever that is. Yeah, let's take a look.
I think we need a little bit more than the diet for you, Aaron.
He's like just under 3 months younger than I am.
We need to start going to the bodybuilding gyms, get you juiced up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there you go.
Just start lifting plates.
That's it.
I would never be able to. I don't think.
TRT?
Do you think there's any amount of work I could do that to have the build of Tyron Woodley?
No, probably not.
That's just not my genetic.
I think
makeup.
Maybe with some steroids. Maybe. We don't know unless we try.
I don't really want to go there.
I
got other stuff on my mind.
You've had your kids. Let's just juice you up
and
let's go. And
just become this angry guy at home.
Yeah,
ripping into
go.
My kids and my wife. That would be fun. So that's, Tyron, I tend to agree with him. I think that, but again, I think my mind always goes to kind of like, what does the promotion think about this? Like if the UFC says we need you to step up and fight, Kamaru Usman, Till's not going to make the weight. He's been rushed to the hospital or whatever, you know, in the worst case scenario, doomsday scenario. And he says, no, there's no way I'm going to do it. And the card's going to be headlined by like Montano and Shevchenko. Like the UFC is going to be not on your good side. But at the same time, if you're the champion, who are they going to put you against that's going to take your title away?
Yeah.
Are they going to make you fight at the O2 Arena against Darren Till? It's not going to make a difference. Yeah. The fight's the fight.
But I don't know. There's all this talk about making weight. If he doesn't make weight again, I mean, I'm writing him off. That's ridiculous.
For Till, it would be the third time in seven fights.
Yeah, that's not, you can't do that. I mean, I know Woodley. So if he doesn't make weight, the title's not on the line, or Woodley would still get the title, but if Till won, he doesn't get the title, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
I spoke to Till, like I mentioned, and I don't want to provide a spoiler for the interview that's going to air on the show on another episode, but he said to me that the weight is the fight for him. He says the fight with Tyron is whatever. That's easy for him. That's fun. But he says making the weight is his fight right now. Can you have a career where that's going to be a recurring theme, where you view the fight as secondary to the fight to make weight?
I think that's an issue with everyone usually now. I mean, you're just so confident. Like, your camp shouldn't really be about learning new things. And I think that's where the difference between fighters and martial artists. A fighter, in my mind, is someone who only prepares for a fight. They'll have their fight, then they take their time off. They don't really do anything. They get fat. They eat. They get out of shape. And they go, I got to fight again. I need now 8 to 10 weeks to get ready for this camp. In that off time, they're doing nothing. But a true martial artist, like, again, the example of the Woodleys, of the GSPs, you know, even with my career, you fight – And then you take 1 week off, and then you get back building. You got to build your strength again. You got to get your power. You got to get your strength and conditioning. You got to learn new techniques. Your defense got to get better. You got to work all your holes and areas. So camp time is just getting into shape and losing the weight. That's all camp really should be. Small strategy with weight cut, you know, and, you know, just staying focused and as relaxed as possible. That's what camp should be.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's an excellent point. So with Woodley and with Till, I think the weird thing about it is I don't know if Woodley knows exactly what he's preparing for. Like, the sample size with Till is pretty low. There's not a whole lot to glean from watching the fights of Darren Till.
Well, he probably...
There's kind of two chapters to his career. Like, he had his first, I think it was two fights or three fights. I can't remember if it was two or three. And then he had that injury layoff, and then he came back and had, I think, then he had three fights. And that's what you're watching. And, I mean, the fight with Thompson was essentially like a kickboxing match.
Yeah, which I think it could be again. And my issue, what scares me a little bit about this fight, is Till's dangerous, and Woodley knows that. So does that give us another, you know, Woodley-Thompson-style fight?
It could.
Because think about it. Look what happened when Till fought Thompson. Very slow pace. There wasn't really crazy amount of action. I mean, so I have a feeling we might see that. Woodley just do enough to win. But I have a feeling we might be here talking about it after, saying how, again, same situation. Woodley's not putting on these exciting fights.
The other thing with Till, though, is we haven't really seen any of his grappling tested.
Yeah.
And Woodley's an all-American wrestler, right? So Woodley could take him down.
But he has that little bit of that Connor in him, you know, where, like, he stays long. He's a little awkward. He's going to try to counterpunch you. So you got to be hesitant shooting in. So that's where I feel we're going to get this slower-paced fight. So I think we can be talking about another Woodley boring fight, which I hope that's not the case.
Yeah. I mean, for his sake.
Well,
you were talking about how, you know, fighters kind of have to look at their career. And we were talking about how Woodley's pretty much been disrespected. And on social media, he's targeted. Bruce Buffer earlier this week on TMZ gets interviewed. They somehow know where Bruce Buffer's going to be. But he says, Nate, I heard you made $7 or more million on your last fight. I don't want to hear you complaining about being underpromoted by the UFC. You should be thanking the UFC and bowing to Dana White every time you see him, Ari Emanuel, and Patrick Whitesell. Do you feel like at this stage in the game, and I've kind of always thought this, and I still continue to think this, that fighters are almost commodities to the public. If you're not a fighter, if you're somebody who watches fighting, and I know Bruce Buffer's obviously been part of the UFC for a long time, but fighters are viewed as, like, they owe you something. Fighters always owe you something. When in reality, they don't, like, Nate Diaz doesn't owe anybody anything.
Absolutely.
He doesn't need to be thankful for what, I mean, the UFC made more money off that fight than he made off of it, right? So, and that's the reason why he made so much money. He got points on a fight that he helped promote.
Yeah. It's a tough situation because you need the promotion, but you also need the individual to do some of their own stuff. Like, Conor McGregor was not made by the UFC. Conor McGregor made Conor McGregor. In my mind, Nate Diaz, his personality, Nate and Nick made themselves through their personality. It wasn't really the UFC. It was them missing press conferences, them getting into fights, them giving the middle finger after everything, them causing commotion. They made their brand themselves, you know? But they needed the platform to do that. So in reality, you need both of it to make that big money and the big superstar. You can't do one without the other. Like, I mean, you look at Woodley, for example. He's complaining about money. Demetrius Johnson's talking about, I should be making millions like everybody else fighting. But the promotion's building you, but you're not doing your job at building it. So you need both of them to be in sync in order to get it.
Is there anything they could have done, though? Like, I personally believe that there's nothing Demetrius Johnson could have done.
But the problem is, which drives me nuts, it's like, okay, with GSP never had the personality to do it. So how did GSP do it? With skill, with, you know, just what Demetrius Johnson's doing. So it's weird that I think GSP was the first one to do it. So now the other guys who are relying on technique and dominance aren't getting that same attention that GSP got. But then now it's the era of the mouth, the talking. So the big stars now are the ones that can talk, where in the past GSP did it with technique, with skill, with class, with positivity, the mindset of a martial artist. Now that's gone.
Is it, though? Because...
But look at Demetrius Johnson. We haven't really seen anything.
But I just feel like...
Woodley, we're not seeing anything.
I just feel like there's something about a fighter or a person that resonates with people. And it's nothing that can really be taught. Like, I think that George is a great example. Like, George wasn't smack-talking people, really. He was just a confident kid that was really fun to watch and just was able to beat people at their own game and do things that people didn't think was otherwise possible because he was so consistent. And I just don't know what it was about him. It's an intangible. Like, I can tell you what it is about Connor and Rhonda that made people gravitate towards them.
Yeah.
But with George, it's kind of this, like, you can't really tell people how to feel about anybody.
Yeah.
And I feel like with Demetrius and with Woodley, like, what more does Woodley have to do to become popular? It seems like Woodley's almost happy being kind of a heel and that he actually is motivated by being disrespected. Yeah. He's built himself into this disrespected character because he's fueled by being disrespected.
But is he that disrespected, though?
Yes.
You feel he's that disrespected? Where...
I do.
Okay.
I think that from the eyes of the general public, he might be the most disrespected champion that the UFC's ever had. And I think that that's become his persona.
But is that because of his lackluster performances with Thompson? Is it because of those performances that he had, these two fights with him, they were slow, they were boring, so he lost that heat because he wasn't putting on exciting fights?
But he always brings up the examples, like, look what I did to Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler was a killer at the time, and I knocked him out in the first round or whatever it was.
Yeah. But then people forget, obviously, and then you're only as good as your last performance.
And the first Thompson fight was excellent. Remember how good the first Thompson fight was?
Yeah.
That's all forgotten
because the second one was so bad. Yeah. It's tough. So, and now you got to think about it. He even said it himself. He's protecting that belt, his legacy. So he's not going to want to make those young mistakes that he made. Like, he's not going to commit himself to those positions. He's not going to go in and just engage you and expect to put an exciting fight because he's putting himself at risk. So, I mean, he is doing the right thing as a sport. But, again, people always look at it. I agree. I agree with both sides. So it's hard for me to sit here and do it. I agree that you have to win. I agree that you have to dominate. You have to put your position. But there is an excitement value. And I think you got to have a little flash of that sometimes, or I think that's all he needs. One good performance, and then we're going to talk about him as the greatest eventually, I feel. I feel he's up there with body shape, potential, the way he's fought, who he's fought. I mean, we could talk to him as easily one of the top pound for pound, but I think his weak performances, we don't put him in that topic.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I don't know what he can do about that. What else do we want to talk about here? So we have Daniel Cormier. He was on Regis. I keep calling it Regis and Kelly. It hasn't been that for like 4 years.
Yeah.
He was on Kelly and Ryan.
I wouldn't even know.
Yeah, it's Ryan Seacrest now. It used to be Kelly and Michael. Remember, Michael Strahan was the co-host.
Yeah, I remember that.
He took off. So Cormier was on the show, and he says he still does want to defend his light heavyweight title before he faces Brock Lesnar. Now,
one before Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. That's now, the question is, aside from Alexander Gustafsson, is there anybody else? I mean, John Jones is the one that comes to mind, but he's currently suspended.
Yeah.
If you were going to headline MSG with Cormier, is there anybody that
Gustafson's dangerous for him too, man?
I mean, they fought before, and Cormier won, but it was a very close fight. And Cormier said, you know, Alexander Gustafsson, thank you. You brought out the best in me kind of thing. And that probably is the fight to make.
It probably, yeah, but I would say so.
Would people care about that fight enough that it headlines MSG?
Well, I guess so. Hopefully DC's a name now that people want to see.
I think right now, if there was any way they could make Jones and Cormier happen, like they got to do it. Like, they got to do it. That's like the fight that Cormier needs to really put a stamp on his legacy. Because if he beats John Jones clean, is he the best ever? Like, it would be hard to deny him that.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, double champion.
If we're talking about John Jones being the best
Stipe,
ever.
Beats John Jones, undefeated.
And then he beats Lesnar, too. But the light heavyweight division's weak. You know what I mean? We don't really have big names other than Gustafsson. Like, you put Volkan Ozdemir. I think that's an easy fight for DC.
But Ozdemir's lined up already with Anthony Smith.
Yeah. Latifi. Yeah.
Latifi's injured. But I think Latifi has been calling for that fight. Yeah.
I mean, they're not.
There's no juicy names.
Name that is going to want him to defend it, which I don't understand. If it's up to me, he's got one fight left. Just win. Go fight Brock and right off.
I'm of the same opinion. Unless John Jones somehow becomes
available.
There's
not a big enough name.
Yeah. Why bother?
Why bother?
Why put your body through that?
I would
give it up. And why risk, you know, diminishing your marketability when you're fighting
Lesnar? I could see Gustafsson beating him.
Yeah.
You know,
Gustafsson could definitely beat him.
And then all of a sudden, you know, now you're retiring with just one of the belts.
But really, the bigger thing for me is, why put your body through that weight cut?
You want to stay big for Lesnar.
Yeah, you're 245 for heavyweight. You're gonna, and he, I imagine he's walking around at around the same weight.
Could it be Lesnar's not ready and he wants to stay active before he gets older?
Lesnar's suspended right now, so they can't make.
I thought he got back
January.
Into the testing pool.
He did. Oh, sorry. So he's not suspended, but he needs to do 6 months of USADA testing before he's eligible to fight again.
Okay.
So I guess he's technically suspended.
So how deep in that 6 months are we?
He's not eligible till January.
Just fine.
Yeah.
For DC to after Stipe, like why not? Just wait it out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that it just doesn't make any sense for him to do it, but he seems pretty set on doing it. He still has the belt, so I imagine that the UFC has contacted him and been like, listen, we're going to have to strip you of this belt if you're not going to defend it. And he's like, no, well, find me an opponent.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now what's happening with Stipe? Have you heard any rumors on Stipe? Because I know he wanted an immediate rematch.
He wants a rematch.
But I don't think the UFC wants it.
To be honest with you, I think that Stipe has a kid now. He just has a newborn child. I think what's probably going to happen is, whatever, DC beats Lesnar, or vice versa. If Lesnar beats DC, then you probably do Lesnar Stipe. But if Cormier beats Lesnar, he'll relinquish the title. He's going to retire, and then you can have Stipe versus either Blades or Volkov. Like if Blades beats Ngannou or Volkov, if Volkov beats, who's Volkov facing again at heavyweight?
It's not Lewis.
There is Lewis. Yeah, it is Lewis. So the winner of that fight, or Blades, if he wins, fights Stipe for the whatever vacant title, or you do a 4-man tournament.
Yeah. Have Lewis and Stipe ever met? No.
No. So I think Stipe.
I think that's an easy
I think Stipe is going to kind of take a step back and just see how things play out. I think
that's good idea.
If he's not going to get the instant rematch, why?
Why fight for why contendership? Fight?
Unless, of course, the UFC is like in a bind and needs like a heavyweight. But yeah. It seems like all the top heavyweights right now are tied up. Like you've got Blades and Francis, you've got Lewis and Volkov.
And then Overeem is number six.
Yeah, no point of doing Overeem and Stipe.
Dos Santos is seven.
Dos Santos just got knocked out by Stipe last year.
Yeah.
Hunt is scheduled to
fight. So I think he waits
Olenek.
It out.
Yeah,
wait it out.
Wait
it out. Let them get either the heavyweights championship settle itself out, and then, or you take a number one contendership with Blades, or if he gets past Ngannou.
Yeah, absolutely. So the latest in terms of UFC Sao Paulo is the card's not looking, is having some issues. So originally we had Glover Teixeira pull out against Jimmy Manua. He was replaced by Thiago Santos, a match that I immediately suggested and thankfully came through because I like that. Thiago Santos wanted to move to light heavyweight, and now he gets to. But since then, we've also had Ketlin Vieira pull out. So Tonya Evinger has been pulled from that card, and she's going to be fighting at UFC 229 now against Aspen Ladd. And Antonio Carlos Jr. has pulled out from his fight with Elias Theodoru, two ranked guys in middleweight. Yeah. So a lot of the big names on that card, aside from Thiago Santos, are starting to fall off, which is unfortunate because that's actually quite a good card, but now it's starting to lose a little bit of star power. Unfortunately, that affects Elias Theodoru, who was called out this past weekend by Eric Anders, who wants to fight Elias at 185. But I don't know what's going to happen with that. And that's why we have the man himself on the show right now. Toronto's own Elias Theodoru joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Joining me now, responding to some breaking news, is Elias Theodoru, the main event, the Spartan himself, apparently on the verge of being rebooked for UFC 231 in Toronto against Caro Desapach, Shoeface, Antonio Carlos Jr., who pulled out of his recent fight that had been scheduled for the end of September in Sao Paulo. Is that all accurate?
Yeah, well, it's looking like that's what it's going to shape up to. Obviously, there's a couple of legal mumbo-jumbo that goes involved, but same guy, I would say, better place. Toronto, home.
There you go. Yeah, you've got home advantage now.
Exactly. He lost his home card, and now excited to be a part of what's shaping up to be a great card in Toronto.
Well, this is somebody who has a bit of a penchant for pulling out of fights. Are you concerned at all that could happen again?
Well, now that you mention it, yes. and obviously, the last 48 hours, the hassle of booking flights and all that other jazz that I've had to cancel in exchange, et cetera, et cetera. It was a hassle. At the very least, this one is home and, not the same, hassles and booking, et cetera, that need to be done. So, someone did call me out for Toronto. I'm hoping he is staying ready just in case Antonio does become a full-out artist. So we'll see.
That person, I imagine, is Eric Anders?
Yes, it is. He called me out about 72 hours ago. And from what I've heard, unfortunately, he did turn down the fight in Brazil. Part of it was the fact that he said something along the lines he can't make weight, or, you know, the weight cut would be hard, et cetera, et cetera, in about a 4 weeks' time. And, you know, obviously, you know, that's a far cry from, you know, what he said not too long ago. One, calling me out after the fight, and two, basically saying that he'd fight anyone, anywhere, anytime. And, you know, that doesn't include Elias Theodoro, you know, September 22nd in Brazil.
Walk me through this then. When do you find out that Carlos Jr. is pulling out? What day?
I found out yesterday.
Okay, so you found out yesterday, and is your first response like, call Eric Anders, the guy just called me out?
Yeah, 100%. I said, let's do that.
And what was their response? We already called the guy?
Yeah, they said no one wanted to fight me in that amount of time.
Do you know anybody else that they reached out to?
Not per se. I know specifically on my end, I was just, you know, pushing on the whole Eric thing because he just called me out.
Yeah. Like you said, it was Saturday night. He said anytime, anyplace, anywhere, and he was given a date and isn't able to do it. So do you normally I imagine you wouldn't have a problem with somebody saying, no, I don't think I can make the weight, or I don't want to, you know, I want a full camp. But under these circumstances, are you annoyed?
That's exactly right. It's the fact that he's now mentioned my name twice. This is the Saturday, obviously, we talked about, but he did call me out when I was getting ready for, I believe, Dan Kelly. And, you know, this is the second time he's used, essentially, my name as leverage in regards to getting him some eyes. And, you know, he's not, when the chance did come through, he didn't come through. So, you know, it's a little frustrating, especially because, as I mentioned, although the booking and, you know, the time that put into it, the camp, that, you know, I'm ready to go. I could fight today. I could fight tomorrow. I could definitely fight September 22nd. So, unfortunately, that's not happening. But with that being said, you know, I have a fight with the 11th best fighter in the world in middleweight. And, you know, as long as he makes it this time around, I'll be fighting him, and I'm really excited for that. And, you know, I think with Eric, he had a great, you know, performance in the last, I would say, 30 seconds of his fight. Other than that, was kind of, you know, questionable. He still got a lot to evolve. He's, you know, as I look at the more athletic Sam Alvey. You know, he's a southpaw. He's got a left hand, and he's going to try and headhunt. There's a lot of holes that I saw, but more importantly, I'm looking at Shoeface. Hopefully he is not a no-face and not appearing this time around.
So with Shoeface, this is a tough matchup for you. I mean, Shoeface is a tough matchup for anybody. Do you see holes in his game that you can exploit? Because, you know, quite frankly, this is a guy that you don't really want to go to the ground with, I'd imagine.
Yeah, no, the ground's lava. It's plain and simple. But I think with that being said, I think there are a lot of holes in his game. He's pretty much Damian Maia-esque in regards to he'll hit you, but the whole purpose is to get closer and just, you know, get a hold of you, and the certain, you know, certain aspects of his game where it's just about tying you up, putting you against a cage, and bringing you to the ground. But with that being said, I've worked really hard in the last little bit to, you know, so both my coaches, all my coaches, saying this is the best that they've ever seen me, and now I have only time on my hands to get better. So I think, you know, in many ways, Shoeface, you know, he's a tough fighter, and he's 11th in the world for a reason, and I'm looking to show why I'm even better. And I'm going to do that in front of thousands of people from my hometown, and I couldn't be more excited. Already have friends and family, you know, letting me know that they're going to be there, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm looking for a big crowd, big Team Spartan crowd.
So what have you had to endure since this cancellation? I know that you had some plans that that had to, I guess, get shuffled, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I was going to obviously fight in Sao Paulo. Then I already booked my flight, again, with myself and my girlfriend, from Toronto, Sao Paulo to Rio. And then we're going to meet a friend who's getting married in Cancun for an all-inclusive week as well. We're still going to the all-inclusive, and in you know, end of September, and then from there, you know, jump right back into camp. But with that being said, I'm still ring boy ready, which I'll be making my return to Kansas City for Invicta 31, which I'm really excited for, and you know, carrying on. You know, the sun will rise another day, and I'm gonna do what I want to do and get my hand raised now, December 8th.
This, I imagine, is the ideal situation for you in terms of a card to fight on. But were you still trying to get that fight in September? Were you still, you know, saying, please find me somebody? Or did you kind of let the ship sail?
No, that's exactly right. And I even was trying to set up something for Moncton as well. So, like, if it didn't work out in September, I was trying to get something for October 27th in Moncton. But it seems like that one's kind of all filled up and whatnot. And, you know, it makes sense that they want me to fight in Toronto because I'm from Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Elias, well, it's always great catching up with you. Is there anything else that you want to get off your chest? Is there anything, any words for Eric Anders before we let you go?
Don't really mention my name until you're ranked because you had your chance and you missed it.
Your phone cut out a little bit, but if I have the gist of it, you don't want him to call you out again until he's ranked.
Yeah, basically just keep my name out of your mouth until you're ranked, because you had your chance and you lost it. And as we said, anytime, anywhere, any place means anyone, or doesn't mean Elias Theodoro September 22nd in Brazil. So he had a chance, and like I said, you said as well, don't mention my name until he's ranked.
It's kind of, the weird thing about that is a fight with Eric Anders doesn't do anything for you. It's not an advantageous matchup for you in terms of what it does for your stock. Do you agree with that? Is that kind of where why you were surprised that he turned it down? Because he's really got nothing to lose by facing you, even if he does have to speed up his camp a little bit.
No, that's exactly right. You know, again, he's got some hype behind him. He has two finishes, but if you look at that. No offense to Tim or whatever the gentleman that he fought, but that guy's nothing, you know, too special in regards to, you know, hype or, you know, his own stock. And then the guy that he did finish before that retired right after because he was on a 3-fight losing streak. So, you know, yes, I understand finishes, you know, are exciting and it definitely does help your own stock and whatnot. But if you just look at whom he's beaten and, you know, what he's been able to accomplish, it's a lot of mess. So, you know, he's new. He's like the newest prospect, I guess, if you will, in the middleweight division. So obviously there's, some interest on that. But that's all it is. And like I said, he's had his chance and he's going to have to do what everyone else does and get a couple more wins and, more importantly, meaningful wins.
Isn't he older than you? I mean, we keep calling him a prospect, but isn't he a little bit older than you are?
I think so. I think so. I think he's a year older than me.
Yeah, so, I mean, when do we kind of temper what we're saying when we call somebody a prospect?
Well, that's true. I guess the only difference would be depending on the weight class, because obviously with the median age being like 36 in middleweight, he's still technically...
Is that a fact? Is that a stat?
Actually, it was higher than that before Bisping and Vitor. Before Bisping and Vitor retired, it was actually like 37.
Like in the top 15.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It probably is close to that. That's pretty funny. All right. Well, Elias, it's always great speaking with you. Always great catching up with you. Look forward to covering your fight in Toronto if I am there. I do have a child on the way that week, so hopefully I am able to make it out to that event. But we'll have to see.
Well, congratulations, my friend, and hopefully I'll see you out there. But like I said, always a pleasure catching up.
All right. Well, if I bring the infant, you can just watch him or her for me after.
Yeah,
after the event,
after,
right?
After, in between, I can multitask and tweet while I do that.
All right. Yeah, I'm sure the baby will be fine with that. All right. Thanks, Elias. Look forward to watching you in Toronto, UFC 231. Hopefully rebooked once ink dries against Antonio Carlos Jr.
Yes, sir.
That was the Spartan himself, the main event, Elias Theodorou. Very, very harsh words there for Eric Anders, but I imagine that fight could be made sometime down the line. So, Joe, UFC in Lincoln, main event, Vic versus Gaethje. I think a lot of people felt Vic was going to be able to hang with Gaethje.
Absolutely.
That he was going to be able to keep up the pace with him. His height was going to be an advantage. The range was going to be an advantage. But what we saw was something completely different. We saw Gaethje implement his game plan, but it wasn't the typical Gaethje fight where it's just an out-and-out war. In fact, there wasn't a whole lot of output from Gaethje in this particular round. It seemed like he was doing what he usually does, which is start off a little bit slow and feel his opponent out.
See, the biggest issue is people look at pressure fighters, guys who like to come forward, as brawlers and not technicians. There is an art to pressure fighting, and good pressure fighting has good ring control, octagon control, and that's what Gaethje's success was. He knew how to cut the octagon off, and that's how we got the big knockout. I mean, a lot of guys in the octagon chase, and they keep chasing, and they keep following guys, and that's called chasing a guy. But instead, you saw Gaethje use a stance adjustment. So what he did was, from his orthodox position, it's easy for guys to circle around. It's easy to get around the corners. So what he did is he went neutral stance. So from his stance, instead of being this way, he put his stance neutral to cut the angle. So this way, he was able to cut the angles a lot more in the octagon. So the way he got that knockout was perfectly set up. So what he did was he shut one door. So if I'm standing in front of an opponent, right now he has two options to go. He can go left or he can go right. So what happens is Gaethje, with his stance, threw that left hook, which shut one door. So Vic only had one option, which was to go the other way, and that's when that big right hand landed. If you watch earlier on in the fight, you saw Gaethje just miss with that right hand. So this way, that hook stopped him from moving, and it put him right in line with the right hand. And the other beautiful thing, why that shot had so much power, is you see Gaethje, when he threw that backhand, the back foot came up, and that's how he was able to close the distance, being the shorter fighter. Being a tall guy, you have to get in. If he was going to reach just this way, it's never going to land. So he moved his back foot forward, and that let him close that distance to get more power.
So with Gaethje, after the fight, they asked him if he saw something in terms of tape with Vic, and he said, no, I didn't. It just was feeling it out in the fight. At what point in the fight do you think he sees that he has that option, or do you think it just is the flow of the fight?
Well, I just think it's what Trevor Whitman does. It's he created this base. I mean, you don't have to. A good pressure fighter, like if you watch any of my fights, I control the ring, and everyone understands, why do you keep landing these low kicks? I use this same kind of theory in my fights with the ring. It's actually easier in the ring because you have corners. But the same concept can apply to MMA. All you have to do, it's called tracking. You got to stay in front of your opponent. If they go this way, you attack them this way, and you hurt them from walking into that. If they go the other way, you attack getting them this way. So what you're doing is you're putting yourself in a position to hit them whichever direction they go, and you punish them for doing that. And, I mean, that's good ring control. And a lot of guys in MMA don't know how to do it, but Gaethje did it perfectly. And I guess that's good coaching and good footwork. I'm pretty sure if you listened to him when he was on the Hawani show, he said how his footwork was on point. And you can see that right there. It's all in his ring control and his ability to pressure fight correctly and efficiently.
Yeah, that was a great fight. So now Gaethje afterwards, he calls out Tony Ferguson. Yep. He kind of jokes with Paul Felder saying, hey, I heard you want to fight me. And Paul said, well, you know, I'd love to. And he goes, I think I'm going to fight Tony Ferguson.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because even being in that broadcast and bringing that commentary, it sucks sometimes. Like, even me, like, everyone keeps talking to me like, oh, I'm talking, I want to fight so-and-so. Like, Joe, stop wanting to fight everybody. I'm like, but I want to. You know what I mean? Like,
you say
I'm
that not in the saying, broadcast?
No, like, afterwards fighter interviews, I'll sit there and be like, oh, man, I would love to fight this guy. I would love to fight that guy. Man, if I was fighting, I would fight. Everyone's like, Joe, stop saying that. But I want to. Like, let me have it, you know? So it's hard. And especially Felder being a current fighter, man, that's got to be hard.
Trying to move his way up the rankings. He's interviewing guys winning main events in his weight class.
Yeah.
And fighting in two weight classes.
That's what happened with Nicky Holtzman when he called me out with that in-ring interview. I was like, you know what I mean? It just kills me. Yeah. It kills me
Gaethje's,
to see it.
Gaethje
was
a little bit lighter, I think, with Felder. With Dan Hooker and Felder, that's when it was like really kind
of I'll be interviewing some of the welterweights. You know, I'm the best welterweight. I'm the best. I'm just sitting in my head. I'm like, man, you would not be that champ if I was still going. I'm going to be the two-division champion. You're lucky I'm still not.
Who's the welterweight champion right
say.
Now?
Harut Gregorian.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I get
easy,
there.
Easy money for Joe?
And I just sit there. I'm like, oh, you guys sit there so confidently. I would whoop everybody. I still have the fighter's mind, the body. Yeah. Like, I'm in good shape. I know I'm better than them. So it's hard for me to sit there and praise these guys when I know I could just demolish them.
Yeah. And you're not even active right now, but
no,
you just
but
have
I
that
know.
Mindset.
I know. I just know. See them, and I know what I have.
Like you said, Felder's recovering from a broken arm, and he wants to fight again. And
absolutely. It's one of the hardest things, but it's funny.
And so Gaethje now, I think Gaethje versus Ferguson would be a great fight, but Ferguson is now in the co-main event
with
Pettis,
right?
That's
a great fight. And I'm happy to see Pettis get and work his way back up.
Yeah, it is a nice story.
It is a very nice story to see a former champ come back, have a big slump, and then come back and already put himself in almost in title contention with a win against Ferguson, right?
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, I don't know if he has much of a shot against Ferguson personally. But every fighter's got a shot. I don't want to say that. But, I mean, a win over Michael Chiesa is a little bit different than a win over Tony Ferguson. We're talking about different tiers here of fighters. Yeah.
But, I mean, Ferguson will open up. Pettis has good striking. He's got a chance.
Yeah.
He's got a chance.
All fighters got a chance. You know me.
Yeah, I know.
I don't write anybody off.
That's exactly.
And hence, with our picks from last week, we made our picks. Joe, you had Justin Gaethje and Courtney Casey, so pat yourself on the back.
Boom.
Plus $25, you hit on both of those. And I had James Krause, who was a plus like 480 underdog when I picked him, and Jake Ellenberger. So Ellenberger lost and retired.
Yeah, he's
but
done.
Krause won.
My boy Krause, too. So I'm happy. I'm happy for you. Yeah. I'm happy for you, and I'm happy for James. And, I mean, I saw that finish, and it was just beautiful, man. Used his good knees. And I was in Denver, so I got to see Montoya. I got to see Camozzi recently. And so it was pretty cool to see all the guys. And then to see James win like that, it's just amazing.
I did my preview on Periscope before the card, and I said basically this fight, Krause versus Alves, is somebody who's got a high fight IQ and very, very good technical striking against someone who with a pretty low fight IQ but a ton of power,
good
a ton of
striking,
sheer strength, great striking, great submission, and a ton of skill. And high fight IQ won out. And that's why I like James Krause. I thought that, you know, like, Alves is, I think, the more complete fighter. I think he's got better tools than James Krause.
Yeah.
But I just think James Krause has such a sharp mind for the game that he's able to find holes that he can exploit.
And
he
did. It was good.
And that knee was crazy.
Yeah, good timing. And it's funny, too, because I think he posted on his Instagram after him and Mark Montoya working that same kind of knee, and boom. So, I mean, good repetition, good coaching, good pad work and strategy, you get the good finish.
And just a good fight IQ. Like, he can't be understated. So he gets it done. Gaethje and Cast Iron Courtney get it done. I was very confident in Gaethje as well. You just happened to pick him first.
But, I remember you saying that. You were going to pick him too.
I like Gaethje a lot in that fight. And then we've got Michael Johnson defeating Feely. That was a controversial decision.
One,
I had it for Johnson, but could have gone either way. Casey beating Hill. I had it for Casey, but I could have gone either way.
Yep.
Somebody said, how could they score a 30-27 for Casey? I go, if they would have scored a 30-27 for Hill, even though Casey won, I still would have thought that was fine. Like, it was just three close rounds.
Yeah, happens.
Barbarina knocks out Ellenberger. Davis and Figueiredo looking very good as a prospect in flyweight. And Eric Anders with that head kick as Tim Williams is getting up at the end of the third round.
Yeah, they're calling it like they were asking him, was he a football kicker? Because it was more of a punt.
Yeah.
It was a good knockout, but I don't know if everyone's hyping it as this knockout of the year contender. I don't think so. But
I don't think so either. I thought the Gaethje knockout was much better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sandhagen and Alcantara, we talked about that being the first round being the round of the year. Alcantara.
Yeah, I can't believe his elbow, man. His elbow, I thought it was officially
broken. Yeah, he said it was broken.
Damn
but
right.
He just went through it.
Yeah.
Corey Sandhagen, man, that's a prospect right there, and he proved it.
Yeah, he looked good.
Yeah, and Andrew Sanchez back on the map. He was able to go the whole three rounds without gassing out, which was an issue for him in the past, so good for him. Gets the win over Marcus Perez. Another pick I was actually quite confident in was Andrew Sanchez, but didn't make the cut for
didn't
me.
Didn't make it, no.
Yeah, and then a couple other good fights on that card as well. So we've got a UFC 228 preview coming up for the next show. Look forward to that. I've got a feature on Darren Till coming next week, the SportsCenter, as I mentioned earlier in the show, on his ascension to a championship-level fighter. And, of course, you can always check out Joseph Valtellini on YouTube. His latest video is on setting up the liver shot. Don't try that one on me, because I will shut down. And Bazooka Kickboxing, 680 Progress Road. We don't see a whole lot of liver shots anymore in MMA, it seems.
No,
like that
drives me nuts, too.
Yeah.
Headhunters. They headhunt too much, and it drives me crazy. I mean, it even drives me crazy that guys will be against the cage and they're covering their head. Not only is their body open, leg kicks, people. Leg kicks. They're sitting there holding their head, not moving. Keep your space. Hit the leg. This way you're longer distance from a defending counters and you can do some damage. Yeah. Leg kicks.
And we only had a minute and 30 sample size with Gaethje and Vic, but not a whole lot of leg kicks for Gaethje. And that's usually the case early on in fights.
Vic started landing some, too. But, man, low kicks, people.
It was really. I actually like seeing Gaethje win in that fashion because he, the more wars he gets into, the more you know you start feeling guilty about watching the guy because you think like this guy's just taking too much damage.
Yeah, it sucks. It's scary.
Yeah,
I mean, I think.
Well, he acknowledged that in my interview with him last week.
But the problem is, like right now, we're talking about him about his brain is this and that. But what about James Vick? You know what I mean? He's the one that's got the concussion right now. He's the one that just got knocked out. So we got to be more worried about James Vick's head right now than Justin Gaethje.
Yeah,
so
very
you
got to
respect both guys in this in the knockout. So,
all right, Joe. Well, we'll release the preview later on this week.
Yep.
Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it. When's your next trip?
I have 2 weeks. Glory, Chicago.
And then a week later,
I'm in Amsterdam. So it's going to be back to back to back. So if I can give, like, by the end of the year, I still have ready. I have Chicago. From Chicago, we go to Amsterdam. From Amsterdam, we're going to Lyon, France. And then we're going to New York, London, and Amsterdam. Glory kickboxing,
no
baby.
Toronto this year again.
No, it's 2019. I'm fingers crossed.
All right.
CEOs are saying it's on the move. But, yeah, anyways, keep watching.
So you're gone then after I get back from Dallas then, the week after?
I guess so, yeah.
When's the Chicago event?
Chicago's the 14th.
14th, yeah.
And then I'm staying the 15th. I'm doing a seminar out there the day after Glory.
Oh, fun. Cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Nice.
Where can people go if they're listening in Chicago?
Dynamite Kickboxing.
All right.
Dynamite Kickboxing. I'll be there doing a seminar the day after Glory.
All right. Well, keep a lookout for the UFC 228 preview. Myself and Joe, interviews with Darren Till and Cody Stamann. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.